Hello, hi, welcome to the Travel Advice Show. Today is August 13th, 2007, and thank you for everybody listening out there. It's been a pleasure. I hope you've been getting some good travel advice from our shows. All our archive shows are on traveladviceshow.com, and we welcome your emails. Everybody who listens, you can email your travel question to show@traveladviceshow.com. Also, you can call in at area code in the U.S. at 801-542-9330. And today we're going to be talking about travel geography, and we're going to talk about the different aspects of geography around the world. And I'm Chris Newton, one of the co-hosts, and my other co-host, Jerry Fuller. How you doing, Jerry?
Very good. It's great to have a show today on this topic because it's a topic that most people don't think about until it's too late.
Yeah.
And it will help make their vacation a lot better.
Yeah, well, that's great. Yeah, we're excited. And one of the main topics, I guess, is that everybody can relate to is the time zones, you know, and the different time zones around the world and how that relates to how your traveling will be there. And what do you think, Jerry? Yeah, like on the time zones, I was amazed by when I went to China, for instance. Mm-hmm. China has like one time zone for the whole country, and it's a huge mass, but they kind of set their own time zone.
Well, it amazes me to no end how this all happens, and I'm not sure why, because countries can do whatever they want.
Yeah.
I know, like, India is divided right down the middle by two time zones. Oh. So they up and decided they're just going to take half of each, and so they're 5.5 hours ahead of GMT. Rather than being 5 hours on the west side and 6 hours on the east side, they're just 5.5 hours. Jeez. So they're the whole time, their time is the whole country at the same time. To make it even more bizarre, when you fly to Nepal, which is just north of India,
right.
I don't know where they got this idea, but they added 15 minutes to India. So they're 5 hours and 45 minutes ahead of GMT. So when you fly from Delhi or someplace into Kathmandu, you have to adjust your clock 15 minutes. Isn't that bizarre?
Gee, that is.
And when you go back into India or somewhere, you subtract 15 minutes. So who knows?
Yeah.
And, I mean, even Alaska, they're down to basically two time zones, and they should be 5.
Yeah,
so you can do about whatever you want. Yeah. And a part of the time zones that we need to talk about is how they affect you in traveling, because most people don't. They all know about jet lag. Everyone
mm-hmm.
does.
Yeah.
But the real thing about it is something that you can do or realize is I think we need to talk about how they started or how you determine.
Okay.
For example, the world is sort of in a global shape, a round circle.
Right.
And a circle has 360 degrees, and so there are 24 hours in the time, in the clock, and it if you divide 360 by 24, it equals 15.
Okay.
So every 15 degrees you travel, you change 1 hour.
Oh.
And time is based upon GMT, which is a suburb of London on the Thames River out there, and it basically is not London time. Because London can go daylight savings time, but GMT stays the same. So in the winter, GMT and London are the same, but in the summer, London is an hour behind GMT.
Oh, wow.
Let's say it's 12 noon in GMT, not London, but GMT. If you every 15 degrees you go west, you subtract 15 minutes, an hour. Every 15 degrees you subtract an hour. Huh. Every 15 degrees you go east, you add an hour.
Huh.
And that's why as you're going east, for India, they had those two time zones. They just split it and 5.5 hours ahead of GMT.
Oh, okay.
So what happens is that you keep adding an hour going east and subtracting an hour going west, you get to midnight if it's 12. I mean, you could do the same thing if it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon. You add 12 hours and you subtract 12 hours. So you hit a place where you're 24 hours different.
Okay.
And that becomes the international dateline. Now, I've crossed it. Many, many times. I probably 175, 200 times in my life. And I still don't understand it. The only thing that I know about crossing that, no matter which direction you go, that as a traveler, you need to know that you're going to be wide awake at midnight and very sleepy at noon, no matter which direction you go. And you'll also be constipated when you cross it.
Really?
Yeah. The reason why, and almost always unless you take care of it, the reason why you're tired is because you've changed 24 hours. You either subtracted 24 hours or you added 24 hours. And so your time says it should be this time, but it isn't. It's really 12 hours difference, actually. So it's if it's 4 o'clock at your house mm-hmm. and you cross the international date line, it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon, it's 4 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
Another day.
Right.
It could be the same day, depending on where you are. But mm-hmm. It's 12 hours different there, but you've changed dates, as in most cases, depending on where you start, because of the 12 hours ahead and 12 hours behind. So you need to realize that as you travel going across the date line, you must drink a lot of liquids. Yeah, not liquor, yeah. but water.
Yeah.
Tons and tons of water.
Yeah.
And you must get up and walk around all the time.
Yeah.
Have you found that out going to China?
Yeah.
It's just, number one, you're on that stupid plane forever.
Yeah.
It's one of the longest flights in the world is going to Asia. Mm-hmm. No matter what, even if you're going to Tokyo, it seems to go forever. But if you're going to Singapore from L.A., nonstop, it's 18 hours.
Yeah.
And you just, ugh. So that's important to know about that. Okay. Just drink tons of water, preferably water, and exercise all the time, get up and walk around. And another thing we need to talk about the time is that dealing with the time and the international date line, it's not a straight line. The international date line is not a straight line.
Right.
Like Kiribati, the country of Kiribati, part of it's on the east side of the international date line, and part of it's on the west side.
Oh, my.
So rather than have two different days and times and junk, what you do is they just change the time, the date line. So if you look at a map and the international date line, it's come bopping around, coming straight down, and all of a sudden, bing, it pops way over there, a long ways over there, mm-hmm. so that they can get all of the country of Kiribati under the same date.
Uh-huh.
So they just changed it. It's bizarre. So you can do anything you want. Like
as
in America, for example, when we get daylight savings time, Arizona doesn't do it.
Right.
Well, southern Arizona doesn't do it. Northern Arizona does.
That's
the Navajo Reservation changes the daylight savings time, but Phoenix and Tucson does not.
Huh.
I mean, you can do whatever you want, so don't ever worry about the time. Just whatever time it is, that's what time it is, and just go from there. That's my philosophy.
Yeah.
People will say, well, how do you handle jet lag? And I say, well, I really don't get it very much, because if it's 2 o'clock where I am, it's 2 o'clock.
Right, yeah, just try
that's
to
what
put
it
in
is.
Your head. It could be a mental thing.
Well, there's
too.
Some of this mental.
Yeah,
you'll feel. You'll keep going back and forth. You know, in America, Europe, we're 8 hours behind or whatever here in Utah.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll say, oh, my credit, it's noon. It's really 4 o'clock in the morning. I should be tired. I've been up all night. And say, no, it's noon. Bing,
mm-hmm.
stay up
yeah.
and do the best that you can.
Yeah.
So the time, that's really important on the time. Some other things, what do you think? One thing that a lot of them, particularly Americans, have a problem with is Fahrenheit and Celsius conversion. And it's really quite simple. It's not critical that you have it to the nth degree, but there's a little simple formula that I use. Basically, you'll take the Celsius, let's say it says it's 20 degrees Celsius. You double it, which is 40, and then you add 30, which makes it 70. So 20 degrees Celsius is approximately 70 degrees Fahrenheit. And then if you see Fahrenheit, it's 70 degrees Fahrenheit, you subtract 30 and then half it. So you just subtract 30, making it 40, half it, making it 20, and then that's really close. Now, the hotter it gets, you need to add 32.
Okay.
Like if it's 30 degrees Celsius, add about 32. If you've doubled it, add about 32.
That's great. Yeah.
But when it's 105, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
So I add 30 no matter what. And it makes it simple, so I know.
Yeah, it's an easy way to do it. Because, in most countries, it's Celsius.
Well, Celsius everywhere but here.
Yeah,
in the United States,
basically. In the United States, Canada. Right.
Yeah, I think we're the only major country in the world that uses Fahrenheit.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's a simple way of doing it.
Okay.
And so you don't have to worry about it. It's just hot or cold, and that's how you do it. Another thing that's interesting on travel, I think, is I call it the Nisia. There are three different Nisias. It's Polynesia and Melanesia and Micronesia. And many people get it confused as they travel through the South Pacific and over into maybe the Western Pacific. And it's really quite easy to understand. The word Nisia means islands. And in Polynesia, Poly means many. And Micronesia means small. And Melanesia, Mela is the word for black. So they're called the Black Islands. Did I say Nisia is islands?
Nisia.
Yeah. So Nisia is islands. And So Polynesia means many islands, and Polynesia is really big. Basically, you draw a line from Hawaii down to French Polynesia, over to New Zealand, and back to Hawaii. And every island in that group, in that line, in that triangle, is Polynesian, except Fiji. And Fiji is Melanesian. It has a little bit of Polynesians living there, but mainly it is Melanesian. And as a result, when you get in those islands, make sure you call them Polynesian. Now, Melanesia is all the way from the eastern part of Indonesia, where the island of New Guinea is. It basically starts at New Guinea and works its way over to Fiji. It includes the Solomon Islands and Vanuatu and New Caledonia and these and Fiji and those islands, all those. And as a result, they are the Melanesian. Now, where these people came from, there are several theories, but most people think they came from like Mongolia and came south. And somewhere around Singapore and that area, they started splitting. And some went down into Irinjaya. And you have the Negrito tribe in Philippines, and they are black also. So the people are black. They're not African black, but they are black and much darker than the other Nisha people. And the Polynesians, there's several theories where they came from. Some say they came from the Americas, and some say they came from Asia. I have my own personal theory. I think they came from the Americas because their houses, like in Samoa and Tonga and places, are the natural houses are designed very much like the Yucatan people in Mexico. This oval shape with the holes through the middle, little doors, and pigs running through, and all that. So as a result, I think they came from there because they're very similar. And I like the word aloha and talofa. They're very much like shalomha in Hebrew, and they're exactly the same meanings. So there's a lot of similarities to that. But to make a long story short, we have Micronesia. And micro means little. And it consists of about 2,400 islands stretching about, well, they start over in a Palau, which is just east of Philippines, and they go all the way over to Kwajalein and to, what is the name of that country, where Kwajalein is, and over into, well, it goes, Micronesia, it goes all the way over to the far right, the island chain I think is Micronesia, and it goes over to there, and as a result, it's the same distance across as the United States is, like from L.A. to New York,
jeez,
and they have about 2,400 islands, and there's only about 10 or 12 of any real size that really have people in airports. There's some smaller ones that have really small airports, but there's only about 10 or 12. And the reason people go there mainly is for the diving, scuba diving. That's the major tourist attraction they have there, except Guam. It's legally is not Micronesia, but it is in Micronesian islands. So it's not the Federation of Micronesia. So, and they're famous for gambling, nightlife, and all that stuff. So to make a long story short, these people probably are a mixture of Polynesian and Asian because they definitely, the Polynesians went over there. You can see things in, that you find in French Polynesia over in Micronesia, same kind of stone statue type things and things like that. So a lot of similarity in lifestyle. So they're similar. And so that, and make sure you use the right Nisha wherever you are.
Yeah.
Let's see. Anything else on geography that we should talk about? Oh, we do. We've got to talk about how can you tell if a place is going to be a desert and dry or if it's going to be green and beautiful.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Now, most people, when you hear the word Caribbean, Chris, what do you think about the word Caribbean? What pops into your brain whenever you think of Caribbean?
Like rainforest or just very lush waterfalls, you know.
Wild
just,
orchids. And
yeah.
All this.
Yeah, maybe like bananas on the trees.
Right.
Yeah, just really lush and yeah.
I know, and that's what we think of when we think of Hawaii and we think of Caribbean and South Pacific. But the truth of the matter is many of the islands in the Caribbean and many parts of the islands of Hawaii are just as deserty and dry and ugly as the Sahara Desert. Not that that's ugly, but it's not what you think the Caribbean or Hawaii should look like. I mean, Grand Cayman If it's dry and desert, they have cactus and scrub oak, and it's a desert. And many of the islands in the Caribbean are that way. Or one side of the island. I mean, if you take Jamaica, for example, Jamaica runs east-west, and down the middle of the island is a thing called Blue Mountains, and they're about 4,000 feet high, straight out of sea level. So as a result, we're going to talk about how you can tell. If you go to the North Shore, and that's where everybody goes, like Ocho Rios and Montego Bay and Negril and all these places, the reason they go there is because it looks like the Caribbean should look like. Now, if you ever go to Kingston, which nobody ever goes to Kingston, you'll say, am I in Jamaica? I mean, it's a desert. It has cactus and scrub oak. It's dry. It's dusty. I mean, you might as well be in downtown Phoenix. I mean, it's just a desert. And people say, wow, I can't believe this. And as a result, we're going to tell you how you can determine anywhere in the world if it's going to be dry and kind of, I won't say ugly because all deserts are not ugly, but if you think you're getting something else and you see this, you're going to say, huh, what happened? Basically speaking, it's very simple. And all you have to know, there are several things which you probably already know. One of them is that the world is round. And what happens is around the middle of the Earth is the thing called equator. And all of us know that in most cases worldwide, at the equator, it's very hot and humid and miserable and what you think it, and tropical and what you think it should be. And so is the water. And so is the wind. Everything is warm at the equator. Well, there are some exceptions where it can be very cold. And mountains and glaciers near the equator, like Mount Kenya, for example, can be very cold up there. And not far from there is Kilimanjaro. And there's several mountains around. But anyway, to make a long story short, the air is warm. It's humid, just like you think it should be. And it is, the only thing you have to know is where you are. North of the equator, you go clockwise. And south of the equator, it's counterclockwise. So the wind north of the equator is going to go clockwise. Now, if you ask a geographer, he's going to say that's not totally true. And it isn't totally true. But it's good enough for what we need. And it actually is true if you actually analyze what I'm going to tell you. Just remember clockwise. So as it starts hot and humid down the equator, and it goes bopping around the Caribbean islands, so it's nice, hot, and humid, and then it works its way up the west coast of the United States, and up through Nova Scotia and Newfoundland, and up through Greenland, and it comes on and hits Europe, comes on bopping across Europe, and comes through Africa, and then it starts heading back across the Atlantic, getting hot and humid again. And as you have gone, as you look, for example, in the Caribbean islands, if there's a mountain on the island, like Guadeloupe and Martinique, St. Lucia, some of these, St. Vincent, some of these islands that are very mountainous, you'll note that on what is called the windward side, is the way the wind is hitting it, and I won't say the west side, the east side, because it's different for every position that you're going in whatever country and area in the world, but it's the side the wind is hitting it, it's going to be nice and green, much greener and more beautiful. And then as it rises up there, it's called what the lapse rate takes effect. So every 2.2 degrees, every 1,000 feet you go up, it drops 3.5 degrees. So as you get it, like in Jamaica, you hit a 4,000 foot mountain, so it's going to be about 15 degrees colder up there. So whenever the wind comes bopping over there and it hits there and goes up that mountain, it gets colder and it starts raining. So it rains on that side. And by the time it gets over, there's not as much water in it. So it just goes on by. And Jamaica, because the Caribbean Sea is its own sea, it has its own clockwise wind. So that wind goes clockwise in the Caribbean Sea. And so that's why Jamaica is not part of the Atlantic clockwise. Because the west side of the Caribbean is in the Caribbean Sea. So as a result, like Jamaica, the wind's going bop around clockwise. It flies over Grand Cayman like there's no such thing because it's flat and never rains in Grand Cayman unless there's a hurricane coming through. So it goes flying across there, makes it a desert, does the circle, and it bops into the north shore of Jamaica. Rain, 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 rain. By the time it gets over the 4,000-foot Blue Mountains, there's no moisture or minimal moisture, so it never rains in Kingston. And so it continues on. And it's just a mess. Whenever, like Aruba, Curacao, and Bonaire, they're flat and they're desert. And there's nothing there green to make it Caribbean except just nice and warm and beautiful water and beach. But So keep in mind, as I give you further the example, as you go bopping up the east coast of the United States, you'll notice like the Carolinas, well, Florida is flat. And Florida is really not naturally green. Florida is really quite ugly. If they don't water every day, it's going to be a desert. So it just flies across there, and it really doesn't rain a lot in Florida until you hit Georgia. And you start hitting them because you've got the Appalachian Mountains, right, and you've got the Blue Ridge and all these things.
All these
mountains along there bopping all the way up to Canada.
Wow.
And as a result, this warm, moist wind bangs into those mountains, and it rains in the Carolinas and in Georgia and in New Jersey and Massachusetts and all these things that you head up there, and they're absolutely beautiful. They're green and lush. And as you get over those mountains, it starts to get less green and lush because most of the moisture is dumped over on the east side of those mountains. Mm-hmm. And then it goes bopping across over Greenland and all these glaciers, so it gets cold. And so it's much colder, but there are no mountains, so it doesn't drop it too much. But it comes bopping across the Atlantic, and it flies into the Alps because the northern part of Europe is, except Norway and Sweden, but the like England and France and the low countries of the Netherlands,
Belgium
and Luxembourg, and northern Germany, and England and Scotland. Scotland is a little bit hilly, and that's why it's so green and pretty.
Yeah.
And Ireland is very hilly, and so that's why it rains. Because here comes this colder air from Greenland, with all this moisture picked up on the Atlantic flying around, and it comes banging these mountains, and because Ireland and Scotland has some beautiful mountains, it rains a bit. But it goes flying across northern Europe, and it doesn't rain until it hits the Alps.
Right.
And these tall Alps go bang, because the Alps go east-west, so it's like hitting the brick wall with your car.
All right.
And so the wind hits it and goes bang, and it causes fronts, and it pushes it back over Germany and France and into England and those countries. And so they get a lot of fog, and they'll get a lot of drizzle, and they get a lot of mess because it can't get over there fast enough because it's bumping, hitting it head-on, not at an angle. But as it gets over these mountains, the Alps, you get into Rome on the other side of it, and it's not very green.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, Rome is a desert. That's why this big giddy Westerns in the 60s were all filmed there. It looks just like the southwest of the United States. It's a desert because all the rain was dumped on the other side of the Alps. And then it flies across the Mediterranean, and there are a couple of mountains every now and then, not high ones, but on the north part of the Africa. And along the coast, on many places, you'll see some beautiful green areas. But then it, whatever moisture was left dumps out there, and then there's no moisture, and we have the Sahara Desert.
Oh, okay.
And it flies across there, gaining heat, and it flies across the Atlantic, and then it picks up stuff, and certain other things happen, and then we get our famous little hurricanes.
Oh.
Because all the moisture it picks up and all the heat that it picked up in the Sahara Desert.
Oh.
But now it happens everywhere. Well, take Australia, for example. You will be flying around, it's counterclockwise, for example. And the wind is up there getting nice and warm in the Pacific, and it comes flying across Australia. But there aren't many mountains in Australia, on the east coast of Australia. It's hills and flat. So as a result, it doesn't rain a lot. And until you get to the Blue Mountains out of Sydney, where it's a mountain, and it's beautiful up there. But most of it is not that beautiful because it doesn't rain. But then it comes circling around counterclockwise, and it bangs into New Zealand. And New Zealand has several things going for it. It has the Tasman Sea with its own little cycle. And then it has the Pacific coming around, that wind. So it has all these mountains, so it's nice and green and beautiful. And by the time it comes bopping into through Antarctica, where it gets cold, picks up more cold. And then it bangs into the southern part of Chile, where it has the Torres de Paine, magnificent 20,000 foot mountain, so it's green and lush and magnificent. Then it bops out of those, and it's not too green as you head on up through the northern part of Chile and through Peru. It's basically a desert. I mean, Lima, it never rains, and then it isn't until you hit the equator again, like parts of the Amazon jungle, that you start getting that moisture in, and it rains. So that just gives you an idea. If you know the direction the wind is going, if you know where it's located, if there's any mountains, if it's one side or the other of Greenland or Antarctica, for example, Cape Town is dry as all get out. There are no mountains. And it works its way all up the southwest coast of Africa And it's a desert. Namibia, Botswana, Walvis Bay, all this is a desert because there's no real mountains and it, no moisture to drop. And then it just keeps going up there, and it's really quite dry until you hit mountains in Cameroon and some places.
Jeez.
So, I mean, that just gives you an idea. So if you, and it happens in the Indian Ocean. It happens everywhere.
Everywhere.
Yeah. And it even works inland. For example, real quickly, if you've ever been into Western Canada, I mean, there can't be many more beautiful places in the world than British Columbia. And that part of Canada and the southern part of Alaska, because it's gained all this moisture coming through Japan and all that place, and then it gets cold in Alaska where there are the famous glaciers we pay money to see. Then they hit all these mountains of what we call the Rockies. And so it rains on the West Coast, and that's why Seattle's so rainy. Has Mount Rainier and all these mountains there, but dumps all this rain, and it comes bopping around there. It's absolutely beautiful. But then you, on the other side, the east side of the Rockies, you hit Calgary, Spokane, and Denver, and then they're dry and deserty, and they have to water because all the moisture is dumped there in the Rockies on the west side because it's coming down there and it stops all the moisture. So if you know where the mountains are located and you know which direction the wind is going and what side of the ocean it is, the west coast or the east side, I mean, you can generally say, and this is not totally true, but you can generally say that the west side of an ocean on the northern part, well, you can say that in the southern part. The west side is generally greener than the east side of the ocean. So the west part of the Atlantic is generally greener than the east side. The west side of the Pacific is generally greener than the east side. And so as a result, unless there are mountains, it's a desert. So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
That people can understand that concept. And the same with the water. As the water is warm down the Caribbean, we'll just take that. As it bops its way up through the Caribbean and the east coast of the United States, the water is pretty warm. It's pretty decent. You go out there and swim and all that. You don't need wetsuits and all that and frolic around. But then as you get cold up in the glaciers of Greenland and you come bopping around, I mean, the water of Europe is cold.
Yeah.
I mean, the north coast of Spain and France and even Portugal water is cold, and even the water of Morocco is cool. And you'll say, well, the Mediterranean is not. It's pretty decent. Well, the reason why, it has its own cycle. It goes clockwise running around there, and it stays the same year-round, basically, because it doesn't get too high to hit any ice, and it doesn't get too low to really get hot. So it stays about the same temperature within a few degrees year-round. It's just the air temperature that will change in the winter and in the summer. But so as you come bopping down on the east coast of the Atlantic, it doesn't start getting warm until you're down in Dakar and the Canary Islands, and then the water is warmer, but it's still not hot. Same in the U.S., the Pacific. If you've ever been to the western part, like Philippines and Taiwan and those places, the water's warm. Japan, the water's pretty warm. And it gets cold in Alaska, because bopping on the west coast of the United States, and it's colder than sin. Even Los Angeles water. Have you been in that water?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, you go ankle deep and it's freezing.
Yeah.
Right. And you have to have a wetsuit.
Yeah, for surfing or...
Yeah. If you're going to stay out there, you've got to have a wetsuit. Even San Diego, the water's cold.
Yeah.
You bop out there for a little bit and run back into the desert hot air and warm up. And even the west coast of Mexico, the water is quite cool. People just don't stay hours in the water like they do on the east coast, like Cancun, Cozumel, and Honduras, because the water is much colder because it's coming from the glaciers of Alaska. So those are just some interesting things about travel geography on what we think you should know in planning your trips to help it make it a better vacation.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's great, Jerry. Well, yeah, that's excellent. I mean, it's funny. I knew this one person when he traveled that he would never change. He would keep his watch to the time of his hometown. And he always felt like if it's at 10 o'clock, we're at 10 p.m. at his place. But then it was really like, you know, maybe like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. But he always like, it's time to go to bed for me, you know, at 10 o'clock or something. But I'd recommend changing your clock right away and get in that mode right away. And don't even think about your home time.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, don't even think about it and just do it like that.
I know a lot of international flight attendants and pilots.
Oh, yeah.
They will stay on their home time.
Oh, they stay on.
Because they're only there 24 hours and they fly back.
Oh, right.
So they'll stay on their home time as much as possible.
Oh, okay.
But one thing that is, when you're talking about that, the international dateline, I mean, I don't understand it. I truly don't, as many times as I've crossed it. And see if you don't either. I mean, how can you leave Sydney, Australia, let's say at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and you fly on a Wednesday, for example, and you fly for like 17 hours. I mean, you fly and 15 hours or whatever it is. You fly and fly. You've had two meals and five movies and slept for 6 hours, and you're still not anywhere there. And you land in Los Angeles, and it's the same day, and it's 10 o'clock in the morning, 5 hours before you left. How can this happen?
You're like, God, well, now you can have a better day now.
I know.
I'm going to improve that day from that day. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't understand funny. That. Yeah, I do understand great. It, but when you actually live it, it's very hard to understand it.
Yeah.
And how can you leave at 10 o'clock from L.A. on a Wednesday at 10 o'clock at night, fly for 15, 16 hours or whatever, and you land in Sydney on Friday morning? It's like at 6 in the morning or something.
Right.
And what happened to Thursday?
What happened? Yeah.
And one time my wife and I went to Hong Kong and Singapore for Christmas, and we left Christmas Eve. And we got to Singapore, and it was the 26th. We never had a 25th.
Right.
We never had a Christmas day.
Never had a Christmas.
We never had a Christmas day that year. But Santa Claus came through the plane.
Oh, nice.
gave everybody a present.
Oh, that's great.
So there was a few hours that we actually lived December the 25th.
Okay.
A couple of hours. We actually lived it, but we didn't know it until they said, Merry Christmas for another hour.
That's great.
You can pop it through the plane.
That's funny. Yeah.
The geography part of travel is what can make or break your trip.
Because if you're not prepared for it.
Yeah. And if you don't realize, you're going to Grand Cayman, you think it's an absolutely lush, tropical, beautiful island. You're spending a week in what you're going to consider pure hell because it's not green and mountainous and what you think. But if you know ahead of time, because Grand Cayman is a magnificent place to vacation, so is Aruba, Curaçao, and Bonaire. But you need to understand what they look like and go to the areas in the world that you want to look like.
Yeah, yeah. That's great. Well, it was a great show. That was excellent. Yeah, I hope
we covered it a lot.
Yeah, we went over. You might have to rewind it a few times and get a lot of the information. But no,
we talked fast.
All that is just really good information. I mean, for me, the time zones and the Celsius Fahrenheit. When I lived in England or Ireland, or lived somewhere for long periods of time, that was always, because in the newscast and newspaper, everything's in Celsius. And for me, being from United States, it was good to kind of get a feel. And I got it down after a couple weeks or so, figuring it out. But, it does.
But most of the time, we're not there.
Yeah, you're only there for a week or a couple
days. And we don't
listen
to the news every day or anything. Yeah. We're running around like little maniacs, touring what we're doing. And
so
that's real quick.
Yeah.
Easy way to do it.
Yeah. So make sure to check out our shows at traveladviceshow.com and email us. Please email us. And, thank you for listening. It's been great. And I hope you enjoy all the archive shows. From last week, we did a show about Ireland, and that was a great show. We talked about all the different destinations in Ireland. Until next week.
We hope to do Indonesia.
Yeah.
We're expecting a guest, and the guest has been very busy. But we don't want to do the show, really, if you don't have to, without this guest, because they are phenomenal.
Yeah.
And but hopefully Indonesia is next.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, okay.
We'll see you all next week.
Yeah, okay, see you next week. There, okay.